You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. 75 people shot and 15 killed in Chicago on a recent weekend, Ron. What's up with that?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's just amazing, and the statistics are absolutely horrific. To date, in the city of Chicago, which isn't even our most violent city in the United States, St. Louis is, followed by Baltimore, 380 people have already been murdered by firearms and other means in the city of Chicago.
Well, I know that you put together some great statistics, and I'd like to hear them a little bit, because you were on Fox News talking about this just the other night, and you know, they don't give you enough time on television to talk about all the statistics here, but I know that I saw you putting them together, so talk to me.
Well, you know, I hate it when they bring in the crime guy to talk about crime, and you want to give him statistics, and then after 2 minutes, they just cut you off, okay? But to date, there have been 380 murders in the city of Chicago, and we're only in August, and of those, 323 have been firearms-related murders. And they've already shot 2015 or 2015 people in that city since January 1. Those people are absolutely out of control.
Well, they're really out of control. And the thing is, it just doesn't seem to be getting any better, even though I know that they put more police out into those areas. The problem's not getting better.
No. You know, I have something called a shot clock. And just to put it in perspective for you, a person in the city of Chicago is shot every 2 hours and 48 minutes and murdered every 15 hours.
Wow. I mean, those are just staggering figures. And the thing that just staggers me is still that this has been going on for a while, a couple of years in Chicago, and we are not solving the problem. So what are the solutions to the problem? I mean, I have my thoughts on that, Ron. I think that we ought to be bringing in the National Guard. I think that we ought to be bringing in some outside help. I think that we ought to be supporting our police department, and we're not. And therefore, why should they go out and face these challenges when they really get in trouble every time they do? And then we're not, the judges are not keeping the people in jail for the offenses that they commit, so they put them back on the street to reoffend.
Well, you know, I read your article in America Out Loud about the judges, and you're absolutely correct. You know, this is a multiphasic problem. First of all, it's not rocket science. Okay,
no.
Sweetheart, and you know that. It's not rocket science. These are all issues that can be solved. They are socio-criminal issues. All right, but everything is behavior driven. So you've got to modify the behavior. And those officials in the city of Chicago, and I dare say in the other cities in the United States that are some of our most violent cities, they do nothing to modify or mitigate bad behavior. And that's why this continues. You know, you talked about the judges and the dysfunctional sentencing structure and the criminal justice system, especially in Chicago, that has just broken down. And, I mean, you know, this is a great example. Okay, you want to talk about behavior. So, you know, they were talking about, you know, the 15 people that were killed and the 75 people that were shot. Well, out of all of those, only one person was identified. Okay, one person out of all the suspects that were involved was
so
identified.
Only one person, there was an arrest made?
One arrest made.
Okay.
Okay, so here's a kid that's in his 20s, and here's the background of this kid. He was on bail for a previous shooting. He was on bail before that for a previous unlawful possession of a firearm, and he's on bail, okay? They haven't done a damn thing with this guy. They haven't locked him up. They keep bailing these guys out. They keep diverting these guys that have committed serious crimes, serious bodily injury, possessions of guns, robberies, all these serious offenses against people where they've seriously hurt people, and they keep probating them, they keep diverting them, they'll put them in the slammer for a few months and let them out, and the statistics just show that when they come out, they commit increasingly more violent crimes.
Well, and that's the record all over the country. So once you are an offender, you have a propensity to reoffend. And once you are a reoffender, the numbers go up dramatically about you reoffending again. So hence my article on the judges. They have got to put these guys behind bars and keep them there. We have got to have the responsibility, and this is what our judges have the responsibility of protecting the people of America. And by letting them out all the time, they put everybody in danger again and again and again.
Well, you know, I recently wrote an article because I had to do a lot of research on recidivism for a case I was working. Let's just take San Francisco, California. It's also a county. It has an 85% recidivism rate, which is not only the highest recidivism rate of any county in the state of California, but in any state in the United States. And what they found is that the more often these guys are locked up for short period of times, the more often they commit further crimes. So they become felony recidivists.
Right, right.
It's absolutely ridiculous. But you know what? All of this stuff is behavior driven, and it starts at the home. And what happens is that these kids, and most of this crime is committed by, you know, adolescents and young adults. Most of these people have grown up in single-parent households where you've just got a mother trying to be mother and father to these kids. The fathers have absconded. They've left these, you know, they impregnate these gals, and they just let them go, and they abandon all of their responsibilities. And so when that mother gives birth, there is no one to be a mentor, a parent, a director, or advisor of these kids. And these kids are bound to get into trouble when they don't have anybody directing
them. And the gang takes the place of the family.
It absolutely does.
And that's historic, and that's what happens. So, I mean, those are problems that those communities have to look at fixing. In the meantime, as we can't fix those problems for them, what has to happen is we have to bring in some outside help, and Rahm Emanuel has done absolutely nothing to mitigate this problem. He's done nothing to save the lives of his community. They have done nothing but vilify the police to the community, so that makes a great big problem in that community as well. And therefore, we are at kind of this stalemate where the bad guys are winning, and we can't allow that to happen in our country because this is a very solvable problem.
It is, but you know what? Let me talk about the component of law enforcement, because, you know, when I was on Fox News, like you said, just the other night, and Jason Chaffetz was the guy that was interviewing me, you know, the former congressman,
sure.
He said, you know, hey, Doc, you know, why can't the cops solve these crimes? And I said, well, look, here's the deal. You know, let me put this in context for you. All these community activists, Black Lives Matter, these liberal politicians, these people trying to get their 15 minutes of fame do nothing but criticize law enforcement and these poor police officers that are in such dangerous and difficult positions. And then you've got the mainstream media that is complicit in this. So, you know, we take all of these societal problems. Don't forget, you know, police officers, as I've said many times, police officers don't cause society's problems. They respond to them, and they try to address those problems. And they end up being the whipping boys and girls of a very dysfunctional society. So here you are, and you're castigating the police, and you're throwing out all these false narratives about how violent and how racist and how Nazi-esque our poor police officers, our men and women behind the badge are. And what you do is you create a Ferguson effect, where instead of being proactive and going out there, and like you and I used to call it shake, rattle, and roll. And, you know, another term for it is stop and frisk, you know, taking a look and behaviorally profiling bad guys, stopping them, searching them, recovering weapons, and putting them in jail, they're saying, hey, you know what? I get paid the same whether I drive around in a police car and just respond to a call for service as I do is if I stick my neck out and try to help the community.
But not only that, Ron, but they have the courts, the ACLU, and the judges have made it be pretty much a policy that we can no longer follow. So we used to go out and FI people, field interview people, and write down notes about who they're with, what they're doing, you know, what they look like, right. That type of thing.
Because those FI cards are, you know, being a detective, those FI cards are so critical in the investigation.
They are absolutely critical. So when you ask today and you say 75 people got shot and only one got arrested, well, why is that? Well, the police haven't been able to do the background job that they needed to do over the last couple of years to know who are the people in those particular
neighborhoods
that are affiliated with those particular people. So if John Doe is the guy that got shot, you could go back into your FI cards and you could see who all the people he hangs out with are, and you know who to go talk to.
Yeah, you know.
Now, they've taken that tool away from the police, which the communities need to understand how critical of a tool that is for police. Oh. It's not invasive. It's not intrusive on anybody's civil rights, but they make it sound as though it is. But it is absolutely a tool that saves people's lives.
You know, I don't know what they called it at LAPD when you were there, but when I was with San Jose PD, we called it ACES, the Automated Case Enrichment System. And this is where you take the field interview card with all the information, you know, not only the, you know, the guy's name and where he lives and his date of birth and a couple of notes on criminal history, but scars, marks, tattoos, which we refer to as salience. And we would put all that information on a card and it would go into that database. So you're looking for a guy, let's say, that shot this person or robbed him, and when the detective is talking to the victim, he goes, yeah, I really didn't get a super good look at the guy a lot, but I remembered that he had a tattoo of a snake on the right side of his neck. Well, you could just go to the automated case enrichment system, and you could type in, give me all guys that have tattoos of snakes on their neck, and you'd get 10 or 15 guys,
and,
you know?
And how important is that in law enforcement? And this is why Chicago has this recurring problem. I mean, it's not one thing like we've talked about. It's a myriad of things that all combine to make the perfect storm to have people not be able to be protected in that city. And can you imagine living in that city right now? And we love Chicago, but I can't imagine. I don't even want to go there, to be honest with you.
Well, we love parts of Chicago. Yeah. Let's be straight about that, because we're not going into South Side Chicago, because I wouldn't go in there, you know, without an armored tank.
Well, and that's not the only place that this is happening anymore. It is spreading out. But either way, I mean, I can't imagine being a family that lives there, that has, you know, worked there, that has made their home there, and to have it kind of go to hell in a handbasket like this, and for you to be afraid, and not just be afraid, but literally sitting in your living room, and you yourself or your child or your grandma gets shot through a wall.
From a stray round.
Exactly. And this is what's happening, and this is just, it's disgraceful that it's being allowed to continue at this rate with nobody doing anything about it.
Well, you know, I want to go back onto the police thing, because, you know, I talk with police officers all over the country, sweetheart. And, you know, this whole thing about how disenfranchised the communities have allowed their police to be. So you got Black Lives Matter, you've got all these other, you know, community activists and all these anti-police groups. And especially Black Lives Matter with their Campaign Zero effort, they've got what I refer to as the four Ds: disenfranchise, disassociate, defund, and dissolve law enforcement. And that, unfortunately, is working. With all these false narratives about how police are out there and they're shooting and they're killing, you know, men of color for no reason at all, let me tell you the statistic that I found. In 2018, to date, in the city of Chicago, there have been only four officer-involved shooting fatals. Four for the whole year so far. Each month, on average, this year in the city of Chicago, 47 people have been murdered by firearms. 47 people. That means that Chicago citizens are killing each other at a rate of 10 times in a month. 10 times what police officers kill suspects during this entire year so far. That just shows you how out of control the false narratives are. But what happens is that people are not going into law enforcement now. They, you know, why should you? Because, you know, you do something, you're going to get castigated. You're going to be, look at all these things that we see on the media where you have a good shoot and the media takes the officer to task, and then you bring out the body camera and the police department, you know, publishes the body camera, and you see that the guy was armed with a gun. The officers were telling him to put the gun down. He turned towards the officers, he pointed the gun at him, or he shot at the officers, and they had to shoot and kill this guy. And the media has, you know, just gone way off the deep end and accused all these officers of killing an unarmed man. And then when we show them the proof of exonerating the officer, we don't even get the courtesy of an apology from them. Why should you go into law enforcement?
They completely ignore that. But it's even worse than that. Because once they put this officer's name all over, the people get their address. People threaten them. People threaten their families.
They vandalize their property. Mm-hmm. They won't serve them in restaurants. They follow them around. They scare the crap out of their wives and kids. This is just, you can't tolerate this type of behavior.
No. And here's a big question that neither of us can answer right now. Is why are we? Why are we tolerating this as a country? And why are we listening to those bad narratives? And why would anybody in the media or not in the media want to allow this to continue to happen?
Because we have a lack of leadership. We have a lack of leadership at the mayoral level, at the city council level, a lot of times, unfortunately, at the chief of police level, because a lot of these guys are just bureaucrats and they're just pawns of the chief of police. We saw that recently in the Los Angeles Police Department.
Yes.
When Charlie Beck was the chief of police there.
Well, and
absolutely disgraceful.
It's gone downhill because, again, we've politicized that whole job instead of making those chiefs of police independent from city councils and from mayors. Now they are completely in their pocket. That they kind of have to be their puppets or they don't get to keep their job. And that doesn't do anybody any good. It needs to be kind of like the government, where the two branches are completely separate and they each have their job to do, but that one cannot override the other on decisions that have to do with the police department. And I think that it needs to go back to being that way. But everything in this country, Ron, has become nothing but politics anymore. And we're not even in the discussion, honestly, of right and wrong anymore. We're in the discussion of left or right.
Well, you know, what is more politically expedient? And that is, of course, a national problem that you and I have talked about before. People are more concerned about political ideology than they are protecting the public. And that, I mean, you can go not only with violent crime, but you can talk about illegal immigration, you know, all of these different issues that have become politicized. And I'll tell you, you know, I've been involved in oversight before as a special investigator, and I will tell you that where I would draw the line is as long as the chief of police and his police officers are obeying the law, then the city fathers and the mayor ought to step away from it, and they shouldn't have any jurisdiction over the police department, or else we get anarchy.
Yep. Well, I'm going to get you another cup of coffee real quick, and I have a strawberry cupcake for you.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our response to active shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com, and be safe out there. Hey, thanks for the coffee, sweetheart.
Hey,
I appreciate
you're
welcome. That.
How's the cupcake?
It's rich.
You know, I'm aware that whenever you have large areas that have big crime stats, like Chicago has right now, there's a huge cost to that. And I'm wondering, because I don't hear anything about it in the news, about the cost of what this amount of shootings in Chicago cost that city.
Well, I'm your Huckleberry.
Well, okay.
So that's me, Mr. Statistics.
Yeah, you're
Mr. Stat. I looked it up. I happened to look it up. And, I mean, you won't even, what do you think it is? I know what it is. What do you think it is? And we're just going to talk, let's just talk medical for a second. What do you think the medical costs to the taxpayers of the city of Chicago are for the thousands of people shot and the hundreds of people killed every year? What do you think it is?
Well, here's my first initial response, although I know it's not right. My initial response is that it really shouldn't cost the city anything because these people are shooting each other. They ought to have to pay their own bills. But that's not, I know, but yeah, but that's not the way the world works, although it should work that way.
No, look at it in terms of everybody that is getting shot or indigent.
I'm sure that it's millions of dollars that it costs the city in all types of ways to treat all of these people that are getting shot.
Sweetheart, you're not even close. Why don't you try on $2.5 billion?
I can't even imagine. Where do they even get that money? What is not being done in the city of Chicago that money could be being used for then?
Okay, just check this out for a second. In a traumatic gunshot wound, the first 35 minutes of treatment, okay, so in other words, ambulance picks you up, you get into emergency triage, and now you're going to the triage and begin surgery, $30,000. For the first 35 minutes, and then exponentially as it climbs and more surgical procedures and aftercare and post-operative and all of that stuff, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars times thousands of people. Okay? Now, what do you think the law enforcement costs are in terms of trying to deploy hundreds of officers into these areas? So you're talking about their salaries, all of the vehicles, the overtime, the investigations, everything that's involved. Now, that one I don't have a price on. I know the city of Chicago does, but I would venture to tell you it's probably at least $100 million.
Well, and the other thing that's concerning about that is, as everybody knows, that when officers have to spend this much time, say, on the south side of Chicago, they can't be on the north side and the east side and the west side. And those people become underserviced because the officers are busy handling all of these shootings.
And you hit the nail on the head. Exactly. And so what happens when you start having X amount of manpower but a much larger need for manpower, right? So here's a great example. You've got a weekend, all right? We've got a holiday weekend coming up. So you got a holiday weekend coming up, and you're going to deploy hundreds of officers into the more crime-ridden, right, gun-violent areas.
Right.
But let's just say at the same time, you're going to have a parade going down the Miracle Mile of Michigan Avenue, and you're going to need police officers for that. Or let's say the President of the United States comes into town, or some visiting dignitary, where it's going to require hundreds of officers to take care of that. You can't rob Peter to pay Paul. There is a cost for everything, and not only an economic cost, but a cost in lives and a cost in reputation.
Well, and then again, the other people who, the areas where those officers are pulled from become underserved, which is unfair to them. Somebody then breaks into their house and threatens them, and they can't get a fast police response as they normally would. And, you know, because the amount of officers are finite, and as you say, less people are willing to go into the police departments anymore because of the way that they're treated, quite frankly.
Exactly.
So we have a finite amount of officers. We have a finite amount of time that those officers can work, you know, as far as days in a row.
And overtime.
And the city has a finite amount of money because the people that where the city is getting the money from, okay, that where are they getting it from? Getting it from the residents of Chicago. Well, the people of Chicago have a finite amount of money that they can contribute to the city. So, I mean, this is a big problem in so many ways. And the thing that's just really amazing to me is that Rahm Emanuel has zero control over the problem. Now, I will say that in one area, I agree with Rahm Emanuel, which I thought I'd never say, because I don't have much, if any, respect for him at all. But he has also brought up, and I think it's just from listening to us, he's also brought up that this is starts in the home. It's a family issue that needs to be solved, you know, from the time that you have a child and bring up that child and give that child values in life.
Nurturing the child.
Sure. And, you know, and I totally do agree with that. I think that anywhere in the country that you find good, solid families, people of faith, people with work ethic, and that type of thing, you don't have these types of situations.
But you know what? And I agree with you. I thought the light bulb must have gone on in Mayor Emanuel's head, which really surprises me.
I doubt it.
And he said, but he did say the right things. And you and I both agree with at least that part of what he said. But here's the thing that really bothers me, because it's sort of a criminal cultural issue. And that is, when he said those things, community activists immediately negatively engaged him and criticized him for blaming the victims. I didn't hear one bit of blaming the victims in what Emanuel had to say. He was blaming the suspects and blaming the families and the dysfunctional families in those communities for not attending to the responsibility of child rearing. What I was hearing was that he was taking on these fathers, these men — they're not fathers, okay, they're cowards — these people that go out and impregnate these young, ignorant, naive young teenagers, get them pregnant, and then move on to the next gal and abandon that child. Okay, that's who he's talking about. And then he's talking about parents that don't do a good job parenting, and look at what happens to your kids when they don't have that guidance. That's what I heard.
Well, and I agree with that. The people that are saying that he's blaming the victims are the same people that want to keep those people victims. So we're going to keep calling them victims.
I agree.
And we're going to make them be victims.
Well, there's an entire industry that grows
sure.
up around that.
Yeah.
You know, just look at people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jacksons, who are people that create victims because they're making money off those people. I think it's just absolutely disgraceful.
Well, there's a lot of people in that boat, and you know, I mean, I'm hoping with people like Candace Williams around and Dr. Ben Carson, those types of better role models that say, hey, we're all the same. We all have the same opportunities. Let's all make what we can of ourselves. And honestly, it doesn't cost any more dollars to raise your child ethically as opposed to unethically. So, you know, that argument just doesn't wash with me, that you can't raise somebody with good values. I mean, look at Dr. Ben Carson's mother, who was extremely poor, and look at that man.
No, you know, you're exactly right. And they have got to hit this problem head on. And we have to take the politics out of this. And again, you and I and a lot of people that are brink thinkers, people that think like we do, we believe that government is only needed for a couple of things. Number one, as a funding source. Number two, because it's a jurisdiction. And number three, because some of the changes that need to take place need to be legislated changes. But other than that, stay the hell out of it and let people that are good, solid thinkers from the corporate and private community come in there and help them to create solutions for these problems, because like you and I both said, these are not difficult, you know, complex issues.
No, but I don't think that our politicians have the brain power and the will, the political will.
And I don't think they have the ethics.
Yeah, to solve these problems, because I'm somebody that doesn't think that most of them can even balance their own checkbook, much less try to manage the finances of a country, much less the ethics and the rules of law and so forth. They are too caught up in their own pocketbooks, in their own wealth, in their own politics to think about Americans anymore. And that's very sad to me.
And you know what? I'm just going to leave it with this. And that is, the city of Chicago is simply a bellwether city for a lot of other cities in the United States, especially, you know, I did that article on the 15 most violent cities in the country. It's a bellwether. And what is happening in Chicago is the same thing that's happening in Baltimore, same thing in Detroit, same thing in Philadelphia, same thing in Washington, D.C., in New Orleans, in Dallas, Texas, in Los Angeles, California, all around this country. And these politicians and these activists and the media and even the citizens of these jurisdictions had better wake the heck up and smell the coffee, because what happens in Chicago is happening throughout the United States, and we're going to see more bodies out there unless this violence thing is addressed and our police are supported.
I want to kind of switch gears, because this news this week with Mueller kind of switching gears with his investigation, and now we're kind of way, way off course on the whole Russia collusion thing.
And you're referring to the independent prosecutor.
Right.
Okay.
And now we're on giving immunity to all of President Trump's friends and business contacts and anything that this guy can get on President Trump. You know, for quite a while, people have said, well, you know, Mueller or Mueller, I'm not even sure how they say it, but I'll say Mueller. He's a fair guy. He's going to do the right thing. He's not political. And I say baloney. I think America is disgusted with this, Ron. And I think that the media is not, but I think that Americans like you and I, and you can give me your opinion, but I know I am totally disgusted with this investigation. I don't think it was ever about Russian collusion. I think it's always been about getting Trump in any which way that they can, and that he has systematically tried to get anything in any way that he can, and he's had a hard time of it, actually. So now he's going to these women that were paid off, which, by the way, I don't care about. I don't care one bit about those women. Here's what I care about. I care about that we have kind of a coup, because you and I have talked about this a little bit.
I think it's a coup d'etat.
Yeah, going on in this country right now, where people are trying to disenfranchise your and my vote, and a lot of Americans vote, half the country of Americans votes, that they're trying to disenfranchise us and say that they know better than we did about who should be president. And they're doing everything behind the scenes to try to find something. And I just want to say one more thing about it. I would venture to say, Ron, if you took a guy like Mueller and you put him investigating every one of the friends and business dealings and finances of any member of Congress, of any judge on the bench, of any attorney, of any senator, of any governor, I would bet that 95% of those people, you could find something somewhere that they've done wrong. Okay, they didn't report something on their taxes. Their accountant made a mistake. That this, whatever, I don't care what it is. You cannot do what they are doing. This, to me, has gone overboard and is unethical. And I'm really, really angry about it.
Well, you know, I have never been an independent prosecutor, but you know, I've been an independent investigator.
And you slept in a Holiday Inn once.
And I slept in a Holiday Inn, but I'll tell you what, I've provided oversight investigations before for major municipalities, and you stay on mission. Okay, you are tasked with a mission. In this case, it's Russian collusion, and that's your mission, Russian collusion.
Well, that all wasn't right? his mission. Well, he no, was he was that, given carte blanche.
But to me, honey, that's a red flag.
Of course.
Okay, this guy's been on this investigation for...
2 years.
2 years. And I think he's got, what, about 80 people on his staff?
$25 million.
All right. And what have they found? They haven't found spit. All right. So what they're doing is they keep augering in, but at the same time, they're sucking out, you know, more people from the periphery because there's nobody in the inside that they have anything on, meaning President Trump. And so they're going back, you know, 10 years or 12 years to people that are associated with them, like you said, you know, a business attorney, a campaign manager, this guy, that guy. None of this stuff had anything to do with Russian collusion, and none of this stuff had anything to do, you know, overtly with President Trump committing any crimes.
Well, don't you think it's really interesting that the only people that he's looking at is Republicans? He has not looked at any of the Democrats. Let's talk about Russian collusion. Would it be Russian collusion with Hillary and with Peter Strzok and with Comey and those people when they get the Steele dossier and they pay for it and then they use it to do other things?
Well,
with
they used it to bootstrap the FISA warrant.
Right. So, and Steele worked with some Russians in there. And then you have Orr and all these people involved, okay? There's your collusion. But none of that's being investigated. Well, and that's what's frustrating. You have somebody being investigated that had nothing to do with Russian collusion, but the people who did have something to do with it are best friends with the guy doing the investigating. This is just so wrong to me.
Well, there's so many red flags in my mind. You know, the most recent red flag was this past week when they started talking about how they're going into Trump's foundation.
Right.
All right. Well, they never went into Hillary Clinton's foundation, and it's a known fact that there was pay-to-play going on there, which was the whole deal behind the whole Uranium One thing.
All right. Talk about Russian collusion.
You want to talk about how the hell do the Russians end up with 20% of our uranium? How do they do that when she's Secretary of State and there's a transference of millions of dollars, okay, from Russian operatives into the Clinton Foundation? How does that take place?
Well,
okay, and nobody investigates that.
And why is this person only interested in people of one political persuasion?
Right.
This just has to stop, Ron. Somebody has to stop this in this country. I don't know who that is. I don't know who it should be. But I think it's wrong.
Well, I think Americans that care about real freedom and care about civil rights and care about ethical investigations and ethical investigators need to start making themselves heard. You know, like Malcolm says on America Out Loud, let the silent voices be heard. And one of the problems that the Republican Party has is that they are not vocal enough. They are not assertive enough. And the voting population, through their legislative representatives, like congressmen and senators, have got to let their representatives know how they feel. You know, the problem is with a lot of conservative people like ourselves and Republicans is that we are so busy working that we can't be as engaged as we would like to be with politics. But the other side, meaning the left, they take advantage of that because they are vociferous about wanting to get rid of President Trump.
Well, and they know how to fight dirty. And the Republicans don't generally fight as dirty as the Democrats. So the Republicans kind of get overwhelmed because they try to, you know, color within the lines, and the other people are scribbling all over the pages.
Well, there needs to be a cleaning up of this entire investigation and a swift conclusion to it, because as an investigator, I see both implicit and confirmation bias. All investigations need to be apolitical, and the agencies that forward those investigations need to be apolitical, and that's not what's been happening. How about one final cup of coffee?
You got it.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, your last cup of coffee for the evening.
I'm good.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? Speaking of coffee, I was in your favorite place the other day. I was driving through Starbucks.
Not my favorite place.
I'm now allowed to do because they changed CEOs. But anyway, I was driving through there and actually had our son behind us in his car. And I generally, when I drive through, if I drive through, I get a cup of coffee. Well, I knew that I had a long day and I would not have another opportunity to eat. So I actually ordered some food as well.
Usually get those egg whites or something that they have there.
Yeah.
What are those egg things?
Yeah, a little egg bite.
Egg bites. That's
yeah.
It.
So I ordered some food. And anyway, I get up to the window in the car. And somebody, the person in front of me, had paid for all of my food and drink. Now, it wasn't just a coffee. It was several food items as well.
How do they know that? I mean, how do they know what you're going to order that they're paying
from? No, you've already ordered, and you're behind them in the line, and they're at the window, and they'll say, I'm going to pay for the car behind me, right?
Man, I'll have the steak and lobster plate.
No, you don't know that they're going to do it wrong.
Sorry.
Anyway, I was a little bit taken aback, as I always am, and I often do the same thing for people as well when I'm in line. And I just think it's such a great thing to do. And so I paid that forward and paid for our son's stuff because I didn't have to pay for mine. And then found out later that he paid it forward and paid for the person behind him. So that was really, really nice. And I was reading about a story. Usually I would never know who did that for me, right? Because they drive away and they're gone and I don't know who they were. And
one of those many senseless acts of kindness. It, right?
Which, it's not senseless, but...
I'm so good with these quotes.
But anyway...
That's why you married me.
There's a lady that somebody had paid for her coffee and she actually got out fast enough to see where that person happened to live in the same neighborhood as she did. And that person later found a note on their car. And, you know, just that little act of kindness, according to the note, was so much appreciated and just really made her day because she had just had a series of bad things happen to her. Her father had passed away. Somebody lost a job. A series of life events that just can knock you down, right?
You know, like I say, every single day, everybody you meet is battling something. Right?
Absolutely. And that's why these little random acts of kindness.
That's what I was looking for.
As opposed to
senseless acts of kindness.
As opposed to senseless.
I like yours much better.
Yeah. can really affect somebody else's day and somebody else's life. And by the way, it's great for your own day as well. So anyway, I just wanted to start with that because the coffee made me think of that. But you know, I saw kind of like what I've decided I want to do in my retirement, Ron.
All right, here it comes.
Okay. Well, in Salt Lake City, Utah, there was a group of, you know, kind of old guys hanging out there and they put a big banner up. And it said, "Old coots giving free advice. It's probably bad advice, but it's free." That's what I want to do. I want to be an old coot.
And you want to give bad advice.
Give bad advice. That's what I want to do. And you know what? A whole lot of people took those guys up on it and chatted with them all
day.
Did they
really?
Yeah, absolutely.
That.
You know, I mean, old guys have so much information to offer if you just listen. That's why in other cultures, they have so much respect for their elders.
You're exactly right.
But in America, we don't do that. in America, we kind of throw our older people away.
You know, one of the things, I don't know if it's exactly about what you're talking about, but along those same lines, I've wanted to do a sociology experiment called the $100 research. And I want to go out to 20 guys that are homeless guys and gals, and I want to give them each person $5 a piece, but I want to get them to, I want to video record it, and I want to sign, get them to sign a liability waiver. And I want to just ask them three questions, but one of the questions I want to ask them is, please tell me the three most critical mistakes that you made in your life to get you right here, where you are today. And I think that would be just a really interesting experiment, and then, you know, publish that maybe on YouTube or something like that. But I agree with you. A lot of old people have got very, very good advice. We're starting to get older ourselves, and I'm sure later on.
You keep saying that.
Well, we are kind of getting older.
And I wish you'd stop saying
that. Okay, and
speak
and someday,
for yourself, Martin,
if we ever have grandkids, which will probably be never, maybe they'll say, "Hey, Papa, right? What did you do?
Yeah,
what did you do in your life?
Yeah, you'll be so old you can't tell them anymore. I don't know, but you know what? Actually, speaking of elderly, there is a guy that I find really, really fascinating, and you know, I love people who invent things. I just think that humans are absolutely, their minds are so fascinating, and just, it's limitless what we can do.
Well, you know, I love it when we have our conversations at night and you bring out all the inventions. That's actually one of my favorite conversations that I have with you upon occasion.
Well, this is not one of those conversations.
Well, darn it.
But however, I do love this one. So there's this young man by the name of Lewis Hornby who... his grandma suffers from dementia.
Oh, my mom did.
Yeah, and so many of our older population do suffer from dementia. Well, one of the things, Ron, that they forget to do is to drink water, and they don't get enough hydration. And in fact, I could probably use some of this guy's invention because I'm notorious for drinking coffee and not water.
Well, I've told you many times you got to water up.
Well, this guy, you know, what a considerate grandson. He's thinking about his grandma. She's got dementia. He knows she's not getting enough water. She keeps getting dehydrated. He invents an item called jelly drops. And in those, they're little bite-sized balls of liquid, kind of like...
Like those little candies we used to have when a kid? They were made out of wax, and you'd bite into them, and there was juice in it?
These aren't made out of wax, but kind of like that, yeah. So... He actually, this guy spent a week living in the home with the people that have dementia to kind of see how they live and, you know, what their needs are. And he created this hydrating jelly drop. And he did a few prototypes and then he got it out. Now, the first time that he gave his grandma these, she ate seven of them. And the seven are equal to about an 8-ounce cup of water.
Oh, nice.
But much easier to get down, much more tasty. And, you know, his grandma had been actually hospitalized for dehydration several times. So he has invented these for the elderly people, and it's quite fascinating that they're 90% water and they have gelling agents and electrolytes to aid in hydration.
Oh, very
so
nice.
I think that that is so fascinating that because he loves somebody, he invented something that can really help all elderly people, and something that, you know, really people should know that this now exists and is a good tasting way that's palatable to people with dementia to get their water.
Wonderful.
That is one. You know, another really innovative and creative guy that I kind of want to say something about today, Ron, is this principal of this school. It's called Westside High School. And I honestly don't know where it is, because when I read about it and I was trying to look, it didn't say what city it was in, but Westside High School, and the principal's name is Akbar Cook. Well, the high school is in an area that is not a very wealthy, well-to-do area, and a lot of the kids were coming to school with very dirty clothes on. So, and they were getting bullied over it and made fun of over it. And
oh, kids can be horrible about that.
Absolutely. So rather than do nothing, as a lot of people do, he did something. And what he did is he put five washers and five dryers into a locker room that he used to have. He set it all up and put it in the locker room so that they can actually do their laundry while they're at school.
Oh, wow. That's a great idea. I don't think I've ever heard anything like that before.
No, and it just takes somebody creative to think of a solution. And, you know, you and I talk about this all the time. It's with so many things in life. It just takes a thought and somebody to act on that thought. And so many times people don't act or they have obstructions to their actions. And really, there's just so much that can be accomplished and so many wonderful things. And this is a wonderful thing. I mean, he's given them a gift, a true gift in their high school years to be able to have clean clothes. And everybody feels good when they have clean clothes.
It increases their self-confidence.
Sure.
It makes them feel, you know, makes them feel normal compared to these kids that have been bullied.
I love clean clothes. So, you know,
who doesn't?
I mean,
right?
just kudos to him. And, you know, I want to talk to you just for a second. We actually just had, we're in Las Vegas, you and I.
Ron and Linda on the road.
Yep, we're on the road. We're in Las Vegas, and we're here for a purpose that really means a lot to me. I know it means a lot to you.
Well, it's our give back.
And we have some people with us that are absolutely amazing people, too. So we are here to do a response to active shooter class, which we'll be doing in the morning.
Right, and we're at the MGM, and
right.
We're actually, you know, just down the road, a very short piece from Mandalay Bay, where Stephen Paddock, you know, killed 58 people and shot over 500.
Exactly. And you, I mean, that if that doesn't bring it home to you, nothing does.
No, that's why our class is full, Linda.
I'm a passionate believer in this class, Ron, and it is something that means a lot to me for us to give back. It's just a little piece of something that if we can teach people what they need to do and the best way to have the best chance of saving themselves in an active shooting
and others
situation, then that's what we're going to do. So we are here
and we're joined by Nate Scarano. Mm-hmm. And Nate is like a son to me, and he's been with me and Martinelli and Associates for 16 years, and he is one of our most awesome trainers. But the reason that Nate is here is he was one of the first law enforcement first responders to the San Bernardino terrorist incident back in December 7th of 2015.
And you did an entire show with Nate.
On a thread of evidence.
On a thread of evidence, which now is on podcast. But it's one of the most riveting shows, Ron. And to listen to Nate tell his story about walking into that room with all of those people down and all of those gunshot wounds, and it's absolutely riveting. And, you know, although I certainly don't want to listen to it all the time because it's also kind of depressing, it's also uplifting in the humanity that you see in these officers that arrived on the scenes and the humanity of the people that were casualties there. It's a fascinating story. So that's why we're here. We definitely will enjoy a dinner with Nate, and we will spend some time. But the purpose is to teach people how to respond in a critical incident.
You know, I just love Nate like he's one of my own, and it's a true honor to have an association and have a good friend who is actually the recipient of the Medal of Valor in law enforcement, which is a big deal. And his participation as a first responder in that horrific incident by two terrorist suspects, by the way, was absolutely amazing. The adversity and the tenacity and the bravery of Nate and his fellow officers to go in there and save as many people as he did. Believe me, there are many people that owe their lives to Nate Scarano and the other first responding officers that were there that day. So I thoroughly enjoy this aspect of our give back, you know, to our community. And I look forward to teaching that class with Nate and even you tomorrow.
Well, and if companies are interested in taking a class like that or having their employees take a class like that, we do offer it to really all of corporate America, churches, hospitals, schools, and, you know, just it's just something that I think is important that everybody knows in, unfortunately, today's environment, right?
Well, you know, honey, in literally every city in the United States that we have taken this class to, we have had full classes, and people have been so appreciative of the training. And, you know, I just want to give you some kudos because this was your brainchild. This was your personal idea. Even though I do all the training, you came up with this wonderful idea. And everybody that comes that we have on our staff that teaches this class absolutely loves doing it.
Well, people need to know the information, and it can save their or someone else's life, and therefore it's important. Well, you know, Ron, since we moved to Texas, I haven't seen a coyote, and when we were in California, we had lots of them, but I haven't seen any. But apparently, they are there, and the next county over, which is Comal County, the sheriff's department has had a number of calls about coyotes lately.
And so what they did is they put out a public service announcement for people that spot coyotes and call 911.
Right.
And specifically to watch out for the following things.
Yeah, only call 911 if you see one of these things. A coyote carrying a box marked Acme.
A coyote dropping an anvil from a hot air balloon.
A coyote posting signs such as detour or free bird seed.
A coyote in possession of a giant magnet.
A coyote in possession of a catapult.
A coyote detonating explosives marked TNT.
A coyote launching self with a giant crossbow.
Please feel free to contact the sheriff's office if you notice coyotes with any of these accessories and committing any of these acts.
Otherwise, please don't call us because they're normal. I think that's really cute. And, you know, it's funny because I had heard that there was coyotes there, but haven't seen them. But this kind of verifies that they're there and, you know, something to be aware of. But it's just funny that they took this tact with all the calls that they were getting and kind of made a little bit of a mockery of the whole thing.
Well, I got to tell you. And I've shared some of these things with you, but the thing that I am really enjoying in the law enforcement community, and just to show you that our guys and gals that wear the badge maintain their sense of humor, is some of these karaoke videos, police karaoke videos that they've been doing around the country.
Oh, yeah, they're funny.
And the karaoke challenge, and then also some of the just absolutely hilarious videos that cops have been posting. And I showed you the recent one about the two guys that were bored on patrol and they decided they were going to be firemen for a day.
I know.
You remember that? So, you know, I mean, just hats off to our men and women in law enforcement. God bless them for all the work they do. I know we have a boy that's a corporal in law enforcement in California. We worry about him every single day. And
another one that's a firefighter.
First responder family. And so just Godspeed to all our men and women that are for first responders. And I don't know about you, but I'm going to grab a late snack because we're in the casino hotel.
Okay.